It's actually Dr. Nicole's St. Lawrence project. He's a professor from the geophysics department of the University of Hokkaido at Sapporo. And I am his local, what's called the local scientist, which is a coordinator, expediter, and local scientist that works on the project when they have a foreign expedition.
Now, on this expedition, could you tell us what the expedition was doing?
Okay, the expedition on this particular project to St. Lawrence Island is working on taking cores of the ancient lake sediments so that they can look at the climate of the ancient world. Particularly, Dr. Nicol likes to work around the time of, or has found work. I'm going to start babbling. Yeah. Dr. Nicol, he's looking for what the climate was like under the Arctic air mass during particular times since and before the last glaciation.
And in this process, how is he looking for that information?
Well, he himself is an expert on ancient lake hydrology, so he does what's called granulometric analysis. He looks at the size of the grains in the core, and he can tell all sorts of things about how much precipitation was going on and how much flow was coming through the lake at that time and that sort of thing. Other scientists attached to his team are looking at other geophysical measurements, such as ferromagnetic orientation, which is a way of looking at what the Earth's magnetic field was like during ancient times. And people are doing carbon dating of the core and that sort of thing. And on the St. Lawrence expedition, we had a pollen scientist along with us, a palynologist, Dr. Maeda from Kobe. And he was the only biologist other than myself attached to the project.
Now when you say they're looking at ancient lakes, why are they looking at ancient lakes?
Well, these people have hypotheses about climatic change and what caused it to occur and what accompanied those changes over time. And so they're looking for evidences of these changes and trying to test their hypotheses.
And the lake provides a particularly good climate and a particularly good place to look for this?
Yes, because the record is, if you're lucky and the lake has deposited a long record, the record is usually clear as long as you avoid certain things like a lake that lost all its sediments when a river came through during ancient times, or earthquake faulting that you core near, or that sort of thing.
But generally, lakes are good locations.
Yes. Well, the project, he started working with lake cores, as I understand, on the Lake Biwa project, which was a project in Japan near Kyoto. There's a large lake called Biwa. And in the 70s, Dr. Horie of Kyoto University took a 200-meter continuous core out of that lake with the help of people like Dr. Nicol. And they're still analyzing that core. That core is about a quarter of a million years old. But since then, they've found that that lake is more ancient than a quarter of a million years. And in fact, last spring, they took a core that's very much longer, and they assume to be about 2 million years plus at the bottom of the core.
Are they doing that kind of work in Alaska?
Yes, except that our lakes are not that ancient, that any that we've cored so far. But the original group of scientists that worked with Horie have branched out to all parts of the world to try to collaborate what they found at Biwa and test those hypotheses and test other hypotheses that they've come up with since. And so Dr. Nicol came to Alaska just sort of incidentally. He is associated with the Cold Temperature Institute at Hokkaido and dropped through to visit the University of Alaska, where they have many friends. The institute has many friends with the Geophysical Institute and the Institute of Water Resources and so on here. And he was on his way to Utah to look at ancient Lake Bonneville. And we took him to Harding Lake because we were doing a project for EPA looking at nutrient cycling in Harding Lake. And he became very excited and told us that that lake had never been glaciated, and he estimated the age at around 45,000 years. And he went back to Japan and wrote a proposal to study, to extract some cores from Harding, which he did in 1979.
And Harding and the St. Lawrence Lake, too, he's handled the last
one. Yes, he's also looked at some lakes on the North Slope near Barrow. He would like to do some coring there. And he has proposed to core Lake Kokonor on the high plateau near Tibet or within Tibet in China. But he's having some difficulties getting permissions for that lake, and so he's put that one on hold. And he says the next lake will be Tanganyika in Africa that he wants to work on. Yes, he's unusually successful in receiving large grants from the Japanese Ministry of Education. From what I understand, each professor in the nation receives about $500 per year for their personal research, and then there's a competitive grant program. And Dr. Nakao has had many, many competitive grants.
What did you do and how did you do it?
Well, the team, do you want to know what the team was doing? Or, yeah. Okay, they were, last year, Dr. Nakao and Mr. Tanaway, one of his associates and former graduate students, came and we went out to the island and met with the native corporations and explained what we wanted to do. And we did some water chemistry and we looked on certain lakes, and Dr. Nakao hiked all over the island looking or rode ATCs or whatever to look for suitable lakes to do what he wanted to do. Then this year, when he came back, he had quite a suite of things he wanted to do. He wanted to core several lakes and did so, and he wanted to do some very detailed hydrologic measurements on a particular lagoon and then on a particular lake also, besides extracting the cores.
Now, what are the mechanics of how they actually do this extracting the cores?
Okay, at Harding Lake we extracted a large diameter core using the ice of winter as a drilling platform, and we used a 12.5 ton drilling rig. That's very impractical to try to get to St. Lawrence Island. And for other reasons, Dr. Nakao was going to use a method of hand coring, usually attributed to a fellow named Livingston here in the United States, called Livingston hand coring. And basically that involves anchoring a floating platform so that it doesn't move at all, if possible. And through a hole in the platform, you set up casing for the drilling, and then the rods are driven by hand using the assist of a hammer that fits over the rods if you need to pound. These cores we have to know the orientation, the north-south orientation of the core exactly, so we don't use any rotation to take these cores. They're either pushed by dead weight or pounded directly down. And then the orientation is marked on the core as it's extracted. That's for the geophysicists working on ferromagnetic questions.
Let me back up now and go back to what's going on. What are you expecting to find, or what are you looking for as precisely? Generally, I should say, instead of precisely, on this project.
Well, of course, many scientists have worked on the hypothesis that St. Lawrence Island was part of the Bering Land Bridge during ancient times when the seas were very much larger and there was a land connection between Siberia and Alaska. And one question that Dr. Maeda is working on, the pollen scientist, is were there trees on St. Lawrence Island? Dr. Colin Vaux published a paper in the early 60s on the basis of one short core taken on St. Lawrence Island, but he had some mysterious tree pollen in there, which he assumed to be distributed from nearby areas, not very nearby, but from other areas than the island itself. He's since published a paper in the early 80s retracting that hypothesis. He's tested it more fully, and he does not believe that that pollen, that spruce pollen, etc., came from what's called pollen rain, or was blown there from other areas, but was more local. Well, one thing that makes it a real pleasure to work with Dr. Nakao is his extreme ability to bring together a research team that works well together in the field. I'm constantly amazed by how his teams work together in the field. And this may be true of Japanese teams in general, I'm not sure. It may be part of their culture and the way that people interact with each other. But for instance, on the Harding Lake project, the person working on the current sedimentation rate had much water to filter every day. We would take discrete samples for him, and he also had built from spare parts what's called a cross-beam transmissometer, which detected what's called scattering layers down through the lake. In other words, layers in the water where there's a lot of sediment suspended. And so we dropped this thing through the water. It recorded temperature, how much light was being cut off by sediment, and depth for us. And then we would read the chart and take samples at that depth. And then he would have to filter the water. The samples were very large, maybe 10 quarts to each sample. So while he was doing that, he did all the cooking for the party. And he's a master cook. And there were just these multi-talents in all these people that I found really surprising, really delightful. Yes, different scientific talents, different logistic handling talents, different that sort of thing. In fact, the pollen scientist, Dr. Maeda, does palynology as a hobby, although that's what we would call him, because his job is as a high school administrator for the city of Kyoto. But during the times when he's free from that job, he works on different research projects looking at palynology, which happens to be the field his PhD is in. Yes. We had economists, we had electrical engineers, we had, besides geophysicists. We've had two graduate students, one for each of the major projects, come over for the actual, either for the preliminary work or for the actual coring.
Are you the only UAF person involved in this project?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
And you serve as a coordinator, local scientist?
Yes. Yes, and that involves doing things like drawing contracts with a company that's going to core, if we're going to do it with large equipment, and especially aiding communication between the Japanese party and the people they have to deal with locally.
Anything else that you'd like to add before I jump around?
Well, I probably should also mention that the reason that I was asked to help Dr. Nakao initially was not only that that I was currently working on a limnological problem on Harding Lake, but that I had spent 3 years in Japan. And even though my Japanese is very poor, I've had a lot of experience communicating with Japanese people. And but Dr. Nakao, on the other hand, is a real communicator. He has obviously studied a lot of English. He is willing to communicate in many ways, including drawing on paper or charades even. As you can imagine, when people are trying to communicate across languages, we often have to act things out.
Thank you for your time.